This week on The Art Beat, we catch up with poet and arborist Eric Scott Sutherland, who is also the founder of Lexington's long-running and popular Holler Poet series.
It's a lot of work putting together a series like this.
It is. It is.
Yeah. How long did the Holler Poet series?
I began it in 2008, and we ran for 8.5 years, monthly, mostly the last Wednesday of the month, up to 100 shows. And last September was the 100th show. And as I started thinking about how to set the plane down without landing gear, it's like 100 is a good number.
You must have made a fortune doing the Holler Poet.
Oh, man.
Show.
I mean, see all these gold chains? Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely for the love of supporting. And actually, my friend Bianca Spriggs, who you know, she always says, I'm like the growing hand. It was an opportunity to create something that was a vehicle for writers to take their work to a different level. And then to reintroduce the community to some legends of writing that maybe didn't have that type of platform to be, you know, on a stage, in a bar, reading their work to a really enthusiastic crowd. So,
where did the love of poetry come from for you?
Back to music. In fact, the first time I did a reading in Lexington 10 years ago or so, I think it was the first one I did, my father was there, and I credit his dislike of Pink Floyd Animals in my love of that album, and specifically the black sleeve with the white liner notes and the lyrics. Pigs, Three Different Ones, which is a very political song. You know, me being 5 years old, looking at that and reading those, to me, that was my first introduction to poetry where I really had the hook set, you know what I mean? Like melody, the way the words can sing on their own. And then, of course, you know, Shel Silverstein, Dr. Seuss, those things that I was being exposed to as a child. Even like some of the skits on Sesame Street, you know, The Electric Company, those very poetic, you know, I grew up in the early 70s, so in the mid 70s, and that was a very poetic time, I think, as far as just the art that we were exposed to daily. So, you know, for me, that's why Holler Poets always had a musical component. 99.9% of the events that I get involved with or create are going to have a musical component, because to me, number one, it's a nice change when you're listening to words, but also those words that songwriter has put together, those, to me, that's poetry as well with accompaniment. It all comes back to music.
You brought the poet series into bars, and that is a place that for a long time you didn't have that kind of a scene, but that it was in the early 20th century, and even earlier than that, it was very common in pubs and things like that.
Right. Well, and I mean, it makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're marginalized communities. You're seeking refuge. You're seeking enjoyment, just like coffee shops, pubs. Those places tend to be communal zones, if you will, campfires where the people can come together, share ideas, hatch new things, hatch revolutions, hatch poetry series, anything that's creative. And so to me, it just made sense after sitting through countless, very boring events.
Academic.
Yeah, like taking it out of the marble wall room on campus, you know, and I'm not saying that that's what necessarily happened here. I mean, we've all seen stuff like that where the speaker could be dynamic and you're in a room that could be a mausoleum.
Yeah, sterile.
Yeah, so for me, it was very important, number one, to have libations, loosen people up. You can enjoy it. You can hear better. You can participate better because, you know, poetry, for sure, is this alive thing that should not be read in a mausoleum, necessarily, unless you're performing a eulogy for someone. To me, it just made sense to kind of put poets on the stage and say, this is a rock show. You know, poetry is rock and roll. poetry has that kind of importance, and it has that kind of, it can have that kind of effect on people with the right performer and the right words.
I've always been fascinated by the difference of reading the poetry. Myself, it was a very intimate experience reading it for yourself, and then seeing someone perform the poetry. It's a different experience. And if you've never seen a poet read their own work,
yes,
or even read someone else's work for that matter, it's an entirely different experience.
Game changer. Particularly for, I found working with younger students and children, and for them, it's a light switch, because what they see poetry as this dead white man's game, right? And that's couldn't be farther from the truth. And so once you suddenly, it becomes alive. It's not those words arranged in a certain way on a page, which you can also, I think, I believe that they're both important entry points. One of the reasons that Holler came about was that I wanted people to have the experience of hearing, and you know that, and you know Ed very well, Ed McClanahan. I can still hear his voice right now as I'm talking about him. So, like, to hear him read his story to you, you can get the meaning, you can laugh, you can, you know, free will with Ed in that story, but to hear him do it is a completely different thing. It changes your perspective of the story. And, you know, I can remember I checked it out at the Frankfurt Library years ago. It's a big book. It's like 100 years of spoken word poetry. I think they have, like, Whitman, like a crackly old, like, little Whitman. You know the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Leaves of Grass.
Yeah.
Seminal work in my life and many writers' lives. To hear, like, a snippet of him reading that, you know, it's a game changer for how you perceive the poem.
Yeah. Dylan Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The delivery of the words is an art in itself.
Exactly. T.S. Eliot. You move it up to contemporary Kentucky poets. You go hear Morris mm-hmm. Manning. You hear Bianca Spriggs. You hear Frank X. Walker, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different experience. You can get that on the page, but to hear them put that out there for you, I think just... it can win over even the hardest of poetry critics, I think. They walk out saying, wow, I feel different. And I've had that happen at Holler, you know. People who were just there to check it out walk out feeling like something had been switched on in them.
What are you working on now?
As I said earlier about Holler being sort of a kind of not necessarily one-offs, but presenting different events. I'm working currently with Eric Reese, who's a professor here at UK, big environmentalist, activist. He came up with this idea for a group called Kentucky Writers and Artists for Reforestation. We are actually going to turn that into a nonprofit, and we're going to have a benefit event on the 15th of April at Al's Bar, and we've got a crazy, amazing lineup. Bobby Ann Mason, Georgella Lyon, Bianca Spriggs, Morris Manning, Silas House, Richard Taylor, Eric Reese, myself, Ron Penn from here at UK, doing some traditional tunes, and also Warren Byram. I'm not sure if Warren's bringing the Cane Lands or if he's doing a trio or he's going to do solo, but he's going to be involved as well. Kind of a good night to hear those writers speak to reforestation and the importance of that. Our first event will be the following Saturday, and this is for writers and artists who have decided to commit to this. We're going to be planting hopefully up to 5,000 trees on abandoned strip mine land around Robinson Forest, which is UK's research forest down there, and which Eric teaches, and so he's very intimately connected to that area. So the idea is we come together as a group, we make a statement to current political climates, et cetera, that reforestation is important. Mining's such a hotbed topic. A lot of lands have been denuded and left to fend for itself. So this is a way for us to say, these mountains are important, these sites are important, let's plant a forest and then see where that goes. So I'd say our focus is going to be on abandoned mine lands, but as I've told folks who are interested, you know, we don't know exactly where it goes. It could spread to the whole state. So we're very excited about that. That event at Owls will be Holler Poets Presents Kentucky Writers and Artists for Reforestation.
When is the date?
Saturday, April 15th at 7 p.m. at Al's Bar will be the Kentucky Writers and Artists for Reforestation benefit. Be starting at 7, kind of an early show. It'd be $5, which is very reasonable. John Lackey did an amazing logo for us, and there will be shirts, so you can support that way and wear around a cool shirt. And then, since we will be incorporating into a nonprofit, you'll be able to make a tax-deductible donation any time of the year to that cause if you feel the need to do so. Just like here at UKY, you can make tax-free donations to the good work that people are doing. So that's one event. Another event that I'm a part of, Kentucky Natural Lands Trust has started a thing. I'm not sure if it's going to be monthly. I know it's going to be a reoccurring event. I like to say it's kind of like a mini TED Talk session for habitat issues and issues that we're dealing with in Kentucky. April 20th, 6 p.m. at West 6th. On Thursday, April 20th at 6 p.m., I'll be taking part in the Wildland Social Club, which is a new event sponsored by Kentucky Natural Lands Trust. 21C Museum and Hotels is a sponsor, as well as West 6th. The event will actually be taking place at the brewery. I think there's going to be 4 speakers and 2 writers this time, but there will be little 15-minute presentations on habitat loss, climate change, etc. Whatever you could imagine would Kentucky Natural Lands Trust would be interested in. Land issues, water quality. Then on the 29th of April, which is Saturday, Al's Bar is celebrating their 10th anniversary, and they've asked 12 acts who have played there a lot. I'm one of those 12 because of Holler Poet Series. So that's going to be an all-day thing. They're going to have music in and out, like their block party style. I will be doing some poems in between bands throughout the night. So come check that out. I think there's 11 other acts. And again, I think it's $5, just celebrating 10 years of creativity and fun at Al's Bar. Next month, I'm also doing the Holler Poets stage again at the Moonshiners Ball, which is going to be the weekend of May 19th through the 21st. It actually moved this year. It's going to be in the same area, but just outside of Irvine, Kentucky. You can find all that information at Moonshiners Ball's website. Bianca Spriggs and myself are the poets this year, and we'll be performing on that Sunday, the 21st. Ben Solee is going to be the headliner that day. He'll be going on at 4. The readings will happen before then. It's a great little affordable Kentucky music festival. Lots of great acts that you all play here on the radio. So that's another thing that's going on that Holler Poets is still involved with.
What about your writing? What are you doing?
My last book, Pendulum, came out in 2014. It seems like ancient history now. I actually was working on a manuscript before then that is, I call my earth poems. If you've seen me perform, you've probably heard some of these works. One that I do a lot is called Kentucky is My Body. It's a lot of the intersection of my love of being out in the woods, creek walking, identifying plants and trees, my life as an arborist, and then my life as an organizer in this community and in this climate. How do we deal with habitat loss? How do we preserve what we have left? How do we fight for clean air and clean water, et cetera? So I'm polishing that one up and then going to start looking for a home for it. So I'm hopeful that I'll have a new book soon.
Life as an arborist and a poet. Where's the intersection and where does it divide?
It certainly doesn't divide. Even before I got into the field, my background is in natural resources conservation. I graduated from the University of Kentucky with that degree. And, you know, even before I became an arborist and started doing the work I do now, a lot of my inspiration came from being in wild places. To me, I'm close to my spiritual center. I'm closest to my spiritual center when I'm in a wild place, whether that's on a creek bank, in a little stand of woods in town. It can happen in my yard, in my garden. To me, it's always been a wellspring of inspiration, both the beauty of wild places and then also the the conflict between society and wild places. So to me, it's just a symbiotic relationship, if you will, of inspiration and then actually being able to work daily to protect those places and inform folks in the community who may not know what kind of tree they have in their yard, how important it is, what kind of function it gives to them and our community. To be able to do that work daily and then be inspired, scratch a little poem and you know, on top of my notebook, it goes hand in hand.
How much do you write on a daily basis?
It depends just how life gets busy, family life, et cetera. You either carve out a window and say, do not come in this room, you know, while I'm doing this, which is, I find, usually doesn't happen. It's harder to do that. But I always have my journal with me. If I'm somewhere where I can't carry stuff, I have a pocket journal in my pocket. So I'm always scratching. Some days I might write some things that are actually in a poem form. I may just scratch a sentence or two. Mm-hmm. So it just sort of varies with how I'm feeling, you know, what's coming and going in the brain on that day.
Here's something I've found. When you turn your mind on to receiving words, it's almost like you can't turn it off. Like once you start down that path,
right,
you can't sleep. You just got to get up and write down what you're thinking.
Right.
It's a spigot.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, and any writer you will talk to about this will tell you, and I always say, when the wave comes, ride it. You know, ride it to the shore. Mm-hmm. Because the waves aren't always coming. And so I think any artist, whether they're painters, musicians, writers, et cetera, will tell you there are times where it does feel like the water is flowing, you know, the spigot is, it's completely open. You can't stop it. And that's what we want, right? Mm-hmm. As creative people, we want to get to that place. And so my advice is when that happens, then you do whatever you can. Get your journal out, mm-hmm. make time, fight people off. You know, I need to get this down.
Sometimes it feels like I'm standing in the shower with my mouth open, and it's just like, I'm thirsty, but I'm, wait a second now.
right.
It goes right over you.
Right. And those are the times when, and that's when it's hard to be a creative person, is when you feel like it's not coming. And I think some of your best work can happen then. It's just like, say you're a star basketball player at the University of Kentucky.
We got a few of them.
We do have a couple. The guys that are in there working, even when they don't feel good, and, you know, those are the guys that go on to be the superstars in the NBA, et cetera, make careers out of it. You know, the people that aren't putting in the work 24/7, you know, it's like you get what you put in. So I think that as artists, when you're not feeling it, is kind of even more crucial to not fall out of practice. Even if you just scratch a few words, try to prompt yourself. I think keeping it moving eventually pays off for you.
Eric, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
It's always a pleasure, Joe.
You have to come in and keep us posted on anything Holler Poet related or when your book comes out.
I would love it.
I'm Joe Conkright for WUKY.